Welcome to ACMN Conversations, a podcast about marketing, media and entertainment matters in Australia. There are some incredible people in our industry and beyond, and there's some amazing things happening both on and off the stage. I'm ACMN's Managing Director, Lyndall Pond. Well, Foundation Theatres, who own and operate Sydney Lyric and Capital Theatre, have been the leaders in our industry in getting theatres reopened, shows back on stage and high patron capacities. Graham has been in the entertainment industry for 12 years with an international career focusing on commercial direction of events and companies to venues. And he wears a pink business shirt like nobody's business. Welcome, Graham. Thank you for joining us today.
Glad to be here. The pink shirt, of course, comes from a musical, because in Gypsy, there's a whole section about you've got to have a gimmick. And I decided when I joined the theatre that I also needed a gimmick.
We love it. It's your unique moment. Where to start? You've now had two very successful show openings in our new COVID normal world, Pippin and Frozen. So firstly, congratulations to you and the team at Foundation Theatres. That was a huge achievement. Let's dive in and find out how you got to this hugely important milestone for the musical theatre industry in Australia and indeed the world. I thought we'd start small today. What was your initial approach to the reopening? Way back when you knew you needed to solve the issues of getting theatres reopened while living with COVID.
I think if we go back to January 2020, like a lot of venues here in Australia, we were really patting ourselves on the back because we had, you know, some great shows in, we had a great year ahead, we had two or three years of solid programming ahead of us, and everything was looking pretty rosy, actually. The Australian musical theatre industry, which we rely on a lot for our business, was pounding along at a rate of knots, and all of the businesses like your own and ours along the way were very successful. Along came March, and in mid-March we had to close our theatres due to some restrictions related to COVID-19 and everything, you know, that we had assumed our business was turned on its head. So we had to rethink every aspect of our business. The first 10 weeks after mid-March are frankly a blur. I can't remember them at all. We spent our time cancelling all of the shows we had in our calendar for the next 6-10 months, and then rescheduling some of the big ones to a period after which we thought COVID would be well and truly behind us. After a couple of months of that blur period of rearranging everything, we decided we kept working on reprogramming the theatres into 2021 and 2022 and 2023. But we also had a big focus on ensuring that we could get the shows that we had into the Capital Theatre and Sydney Lyric back on board as quickly as we could. And that meant convincing Disney to continue to produce Frozen and others to continue to produce their shows at the Sydney Lyric. To do that, we took an enormous gamble, really, an expensive gamble. And we decided to partner with Gordon Frost Organisation, the New South Wales Government and the Star to bring Pippin to our stage at the Sydney Lyric, and as the first major sort of musical to open in this country. And we started selling tickets 13 weeks before our first performance, and at the same time started to pull the show together, which was a mammoth task to complete in 13 weeks. So we had to take our hats off to the team at Gordon Frost, John, Suzanne and the team, and our own team here at the theatre for making that a reality. That convinced and helped to give confidence to Disney to proceed with Frozen, which we opened to a standing ovation. So fabulous. Two theatres pumping along. Couldn't be happier, actually, to have achieved all of that.
Yeah, it was magnificent. Well done. So in your world, there's front of house and there's back of house that you needed to make COVID safe, I guess. So tell us a little bit about the differences that you faced in addressing both of those issues.
One of the strategies we had from the get-go was to divide our theatres into two parts, two zones, if you like. One which is very production-focused, the performers, musicians, crew, technical staff, facility staff in one team, and another group of people who worked only in a separate zone, who are front of house team, bar team, myself and all of my team, and they're called Zone A and Zone B. And we don't cross over those zones. The problem with that is it's complicated and a big change to everyone's protocols working in the theatres. So it took a little while for us to do that. But it's also a really big change in the culture of the way our theatres have operated, where all of these teams, you know, all came together every day and worked beautifully together. And, you know, we were one big happy family for a long-running production. It was a really nice way of doing it. But we had to separate them, which was tough to do. And you can only go from Zone A into Zone B in full PPE. And some people have to do that, but so far I have only had to do it a few times. And the reason we do that is because, and we've done it through auditions, through rehearsals, through bump-ins, through the whole process of getting shows into the theatre. Now everyone understands it and takes it pretty seriously, actually. And the reason that is there is because we want to protect the show as much as possible. So that sort of two-zone strategy was our strategy to minimise the risk of transfer between the general public and the production team whilst they're in the theatre. Of course, they could all go to Thursday next Thursday and it's all over. But I think the cast and crew and all those people in Zone B, the production team, if you like, are taking that really seriously and trying to be as sensible as possible, understanding that if they become unwell because of COVID-19, then, you know, the show's over and, you know, so is the livelihood of hundreds of people.
Yeah, it's risk mitigation strategy after risk mitigation strategy, isn't it?
Exactly. You're adding risk minimization on top of risk minimization. If you know anything about mathematics, the more you do that, the better you mitigate risk. So it's always been about minimizing the risk along the way.
And I think that's a great insight into theatres all over Australia that need to face the same challenges, that they can learn from that model and see if that works for them.
For us, we're a little bit lucky because our theatres are standalone. You know, we can separate them just outside, about 10 or 15 metres outside my office. We call it Checkpoint Charlie. There's a whole series of fences, and the only way you can get through that fence is by donning full PPE, masks, booties, gloves, the whole kit and caboodle. And for us in our two theatres, that's fairly easy. It's worked for us. It will probably work for many other theatres, but there are a lot of places where you'll have to rethink how you might keep those two things apart. For us, it was one of the really fundamental elements of our COVID safety plan. And so everything we developed was developed around the two-zone operation.
Yeah. Makes perfect sense. Tell us a bit more about the challenges and the speed humps that you hit along the way. There might be a few examples that you want to share with us.
We of course, started talking about this long before we knew we'd be able to operate the theatres at any reasonable capacity. And I think a core team of people here in our theatres started those conversations. And there were a lot of work. We did a lot of workshops on specific elements, like how do you get a radio and a torch into the pockets of an usher who can't come back of house and you don't want anyone touching it along the way. It's absolutely the minutiae of how you operate a theatre. And I think one of the surprising things that I learned was that, you know, we had to go through to the minutiae of our standard operating processes in order to learn how we're going to do each element of that in a way that delivered to the goals of our COVID safety plan. And I think the challenge was, in a big sense, that there was a group of people who, in my leadership team largely, who developed those procedures in the absolute minutiae they needed to be. And then the mammoth task of taking those operating procedures and delivering them into the heads and minds and spirits of a few hundred people who work in our theatres, that was the task that was the most difficult.
Yeah, and a new way of working. Like, everyone has had to really think, this is how I used to do it, and now this is how I need to do it. And
yeah, look, change is never easy. Some people embrace it with open arms and love the challenge of change. Some people thrive on things that change. And some people are still sitting in January 2020 and would much prefer, are just waiting for it to go back to that. And I suspect it's never going to go back to that.
Yeah, but the safer you're making our theatres, the closer we are to getting back to normal. Yeah.
The best review we can get in many ways is, you know, I felt safe when I was there, and you should go too because it's pretty safe.
Yeah, yeah, correct. I'm sure you've had to draw from your networks far and wide to pull this off. What were some of the really critical relationships that have helped you deliver the outcome of getting the theatres reopened?
I can't overstate the relationship with our production partners. You know, being able to have these conversations about changes in the culture of the theatre with the producers that are working in your theatres, frankly and openly, has been really useful. So that's been great. Government, having some contacts in government who can help you navigate the challenges of getting an exemption, of being able to get a given opportunity to explain what your COVID safety plan does and how it works, enabling you to give confidence to those business partners and government that what you're planning actually is going to work, and enabling them to have confidence that you've got the capability within your organisation to deliver what you're promising in your COVID safety plan and in all of your plans, really. That's critical. So, look, along the way, I think, you know, you can never have too close a relationship with your production partners. You can't have too close a relationship with some levels of government that have helped us through this. You know, other partners, you know, at the Sydney Lyric, we could not have done Pippin without the support of the Star, who really were the initiators of the idea of saying, look, we can't wait until March or April to get a new show up. You know, we'd really like to see something happening sooner. How do we do that?
Yeah, and I think the relationships are really important, but it's the communication between those partners that has enabled you to have such clear communication to find that path forward that is the whole new world for you. So, yeah, it makes sense. Now, you've been in the events and entertainment business a long time and seen it all, so to speak, but this was certainly a new scenario to deal with. Tell us a bit more about either your or your business's unique skills that have helped you achieve this opening.
I think the thing that is probably the foremost in my mind is understanding the commercial challenges that the business is facing and dealing with the human face of what that turns out to be. That's the biggest challenge. The other big challenge I think we had through COVID-19 and why opening the theatres was critical is because if we weren't successful in having Frozen and other shows reopen again in this period, our theatres would have been closed for until mid-2022 perhaps. And I think that if you close for that amount of time, we would have lost all of our key team, much of our key team, but also a lot of the people who work in the industry, who work in it not because it's a great-paying job, because it's not, but because they adore being in it. You know, I'm talking about a makeup artist or a wiggy or a dresser or a wardrobe specialist or a flyman or a mechanist on that stage. Those are jobs that that are specifically skilled for the type of theatre that we do in our theatres, and those people would have left our industry because of the absolute uncertainty associated with it and got another job doing something else that was way more certain. And who would blame them for doing that? But along the way, we'd have lost them to our industry, an industry that they love and adore, really. And that means that our industry would not be the same when we tried to restart in 2 years' time. It would have been a decimated industry. And frankly, it would take us 10 years to rebuild what we'd lost during this period. So, apart from getting theatres open and people coming to see shows, getting people back to work in our theatres was more critical than ever, because losing capability in an industry that's already pretty threadbare would have been tragic.
Yeah, I think we cannot underestimate the far-reaching impact on the people that have been out of work this year, and that the knock-on effect, obviously, of your theatre reopening flows all the way through to, not only the ushers, but
ACMN,
the marketing agencies, everybody that touches this big world. So that's why you reopening your doors is so critical to the far-reaching impact that this has had to our industry. Yeah,
You're most welcome.
Now, what advice would you give to other states and theatres looking to get entertainment back to where it was and getting their doors open? Because not everyone's as far forward as what you guys have been in Sydney.
No, and we're trying to engage as much as we can with the other commercial theatres in other states. My advice would be, don't underestimate the minutiae of the detail that's necessary in order to implement the processes needed to satisfy a COVID safety plan. It's surprising just how many processes you need to touch and twist and change. And don't underestimate the challenge of communicating that through to the rank and file of your entire organisation.
Yeah, it sounds like it's the detail and the communication is the consistency, and then all the theatres are going to find their version of their unit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's the big challenge. I mean, we of course made a lot of mistakes along the way, as you'd expect, but I think in the end it's working well. And in the end, I think what we've learned is that it's all about process.
So I guess it's a bit of what next. If you could take the mic from me and ask yourself one question I haven't asked you, what would that be?
I would probably say, what are your failures along the way? And I'd tell you I'm not going to tell you my failures. It's not in my character. How do you get a uniform onto, how do you deal with uniforms that, we launder and maintain for our bar staff? How do you do that without them touching other people, without change rooms that they used to have access to? I think our final version of how we do that was our fourth go. We had four what I thought were final versions of how it's going to happen, and the final version is diametrically different to the first version. So, to the extent that we can share some of those learnings with others, please, be happy to do that, because our final solution is fairly elegant, a bit clumpy along the way, but fairly elegant in the end as well.
And it's working, so the proof is in the pudding. Well, that has been a really insightful conversation, and I think that the industry-driven response that you've come up with really has benefited the industry as a whole. So, thank you for making that happen. We would love to get to know you a little bit better. We like to throw in a couple of quick questions at the end, if you've got time. So let's just start with a really, it can be as big or as little as you want, but why, Graham, why does arts matter to you?
Over time, why arts matters has changed for me, I guess. As a younger person, I was way more interested in the way that the arts could affect the emotional well-being of people, including myself. How, you know, its ability to distract and delight at the same time, and how the arts could reflect our society, either in the way that we want it to be or the way that it is, and help us to reflect on that ourselves. I think as I've joined the commercial theatre world, being a lover of musical theatres for most of my life, I've learned a lot, I've reflected and learned a lot more about the joy that the sorts of work that we're able to present gives to such a broad spectrum and demographic within our society. You know, our shows are complex and expensive and delightful in many senses, and they attract an enormously diverse audience, some of whom are old theatre goers for all of their lives, some of whom will be going to the theatre for the very first time just because the subject matter is interest to them, whether it's their first Disney production or the Book of Mormon, which, you know, delivered theatre in a completely different way, or whatever it might be that we've done. That sort of delight and the broad demographic that we're able to reach with the works that we present is enormously rewarding and fulfilling to work in. So whilst we're not curing cancer or third world starvation, I think we deliver a fairly essential element to society in enabling them to enjoy sorts of stuff that we're able to present, you know, and it's often wildly creative and incredibly satisfying to experience.
Yeah, that's a really lovely sentiment. Thank you. I think the broad demographics is one of the things that makes it so appealing. So it's lovely. Where did you discover your love of theatre or entertainment?
I had a dancing teacher when I was young who played Dolly Levi in Hello Dolly when I was about 7 or 8 years old at the local musical society in the country, in New South Wales. And she was, to me, the very epitome of what Dolly Levi was. She was a bit of a smoker, and she had a gravelly Dolly Levi voice, and she was, you know, a little bit forward and coming like Dolly Levi. And I remember giving her flowers at the foot of the stage at the end of the Saturday night performance, and thinking, you know, I've never been as happy in my life as this. So yeah, Hello Dolly was the first show that I saw as a kid, and my mother and I used to sneak to Sydney for a Wednesday matinee from the country regularly as a kid, and so I got to see all the shows, or most of the shows, in Sydney, and she took me out of school to do that. So I've always loved the musical theatre. I, you know, as a singer and dancer as a child, and appreciate just what talent it takes to do some of the things that our performers and musicians do. But of course, I wanted to work on every show, so I'm an administrator.
Good work. Yeah, there's always a character back in our history, isn't there, that really turned on the love of the arts.
Yep.
Well, you're a bit of a character in our industry, Graeme, so let's finish on another little sneaky question. If you were a character in a musical, who would it be and why?
Well, you know, of course, I have been a character in a musical. In amateur musical theatre, I'm a fine amateur musical theatre performer, just didn't get discovered properly. And I played several roles which were, you know, the male lead that comes on, sings the song, kisses the girl and swans off the stage. And whilst the songs can be satisfying, they are the most boring of roles. And then I've played a few funny characters or sinister characters, and they're the ones that I found so much fun. Being the bad guy in musical theatre is terrific fun. Being the funny guy is even funner. And so I much prefer the funny and sinister characters than I do the lead roles. And if you've seen Frozen now, you know, if you go and see Matt Lee play Olaf in Frozen, it's a absolute lesson in how to do just that, you know, beautiful piece of acting from a sublime performer who's done just a great job with a beautiful character, a beautiful comic role, you know.
Yeah, the comic timing's just phenomenal.
Perfect, yeah, yeah. So I think those roles can be more difficult to master than the guy that walks on and kisses the girl and swans off the stage, actually. And so I appreciate those more than most.
Gorgeous. So you'll be Olaf for the next.
Yeah, yeah. Or Pumbaa, or you know, one of those. You know, anything where you can talk about farting on stage is always
good. What a terrific note to end it on. Thank you so much.
Sorry about that.
And I think we've learned a lot today, and as Graham has said, he's volunteered his time and advice, so we'll certainly put his contacts in the show notes. So thank you so much, Graham, for your time today and everything that you've shared with us.
My pleasure.
And I would urge everyone to get back to the theatre. The protocols are really, really low impact. In fact, you barely notice them. And it is still a great night at the theatre. You can still have a quick glass of bubbles somewhere on your way and then sit back and enjoy it live. It just, you cannot get better than seeing it live. So thanks, Graham.
Thanks, Lyndall. Bye-bye.